Chapter 1. Falling.
November, 1999. The council pronounced me not guilty of killing Lyndon. The vote of the seven elders of the great clans was not unanimous, though. The Vicroth representative and the Windenkell, my mother's own clanswoman, voted against me. I had almost hoped they would condemn me, for then at least my life's path would be certain. And in a way I was guilty, was I not? I filled Lyndon's head with my talk of vengeance and opened his mind to the idea of calling on the darkness. If I had not actually killed my brother, then I knew he had found his way to his death along a path I had shown him. When I was found innocent, I felt lost. I knew only that I would spend the rest of my life atoning for Lyndon's death. Gamonach.
Snowflakes mixed with sleet whipped at my cheeks. I stumbled through the snow, supporting my boyfriend Cal's weight against me, my feet growing leaden and icy in my clogs. Cal stumbled, and I braced myself. In the moonlight, I peered up at his face, alarmed by how white he looked, how beaten, how ill. I trudged through the dark woods, feeling like every step away from the cliff took an hour. The cliff. In my mind, I saw Hunter Nile falling backward, his arms windmilling as he went over the edge. Bile rose in my throat, and I swallowed convulsively. Yes, Cal was a mess, but Hunter was probably dead. Dead! And Cal and I had killed him. I drew in a shuddering breath as Cal swayed against me. Together, we stumbled through the woods, accompanied only by the malevolent hiss of the sleet in the black branches around us. Where was Cal's house? Are we headed the right way? I asked Cal. The freezing wind snatched the words from my throat. Cal blinked. One eye was swollen shut and already purple. His beautiful mouth was bloody, and his lower lip was split. Never mind, I said, looking ahead. I think this is it. By the time Cal's house was in view, we were both soaked through and frozen. Anxiously, I scanned the circular driveway for Celine Belltower's car, but Cal's mother was still out. Not good. I needed help.
Tired,
Cal said fuzzily as I helped him up the steps. Somehow, we made it through the front door, but once inside, there was no way I could get him up to his attic room.
There.
Cal gestured with a hand swollen from punching Hunter. Feeling unbearably weary, I lurched through the parlor doors and helped Cal collapse on the blue sofa. He toppled over, curling to fit on the cushions. He was shaking with cold, his face shocked and pale. Cal, I said, we need to call 911, about Hunter. Maybe they can find him, it might not be too late. Cal's face crinkled in a grotesque approximation of a laugh. His split lip oozed blood, and his cheek was mottled with angry bruises.
It's too late, he croaked, his teeth chattering. I'm positive.
He nodded toward the fireplace, his eyes shut.
Fire.
Was it too late for Hunter? A tiny part of me almost hoped it was. If Hunter was dead, then we couldn't help him, and I didn't even have to try. But was he? A sob rose in my throat. Was he? Okay, I thought, trying to calm down. Okay, break down the situation, make a plan. I knelt and clumsily piled newspaper and kindling on the grate. I chose three large logs and arranged them on top. I didn't see any matches, so closing my eyes, I tried to summon fire with my mind. But my magical powers felt almost non-existent. In fact, just trying to call on them made my head ache sharply. After nearly 17 years of living without magic, to find myself bereft of it now was terrifying. I opened my eyes and looked wildly around. Finally, I saw an Aemon flame on the mantel, and I grabbed it and popped its trigger. The paper and kindling caught. I swayed toward the flames, feeling their healing warmth. Then I glanced at Cal again. He looked wretched. Cal? I helped him sit up enough to tug him out of his leather jacket, taking care not to scrape his wrists, which were raw and blistered where Hunter had tried to bind them with a strange magical chain. I pulled off